want to thank Representative Alan Morrison for joining us today. He represents District 42, is that correct, in Indiana?
Yes, sir, it is.
And give us a breakdown geographically of District 42.
Sure. It's the west central part of the state. So we've got parts of Vigo, Clay, Park, Vermilion, Warren, and Fountain County. It's a very, very rural part of the of Indiana, but a nice mix of some small towns and some great state parks, and it's a beautiful part of our state.
Great, great. Now, you have a unique background because most guys would be happy to wake up every day working in the world of sports. And they wouldn't necessarily exchange that for waking up every day to work in the world of politics, but you did exactly that. So give us a little background, because it looks like you did some time with the Flint Generals hockey team.
Yeah, I've got a pretty extensive professional and amateur sports background. I did an internship with the Indianapolis Ice back in the late 90s. I worked with Spectacor Management Group, SMG, out of Pittsburgh and Three River Stadium back when it was still around. Then I was up in Flint, Michigan with the Flint Generals up there for about a year and a half. We won a championship when I was there, so that was fun. Sold corporate sponsorships and ticket packages and helped book the arena up there with other events during the off season. Then a buddy of mine called me and said that he knew of a job that Rose Holman had for me that would be perfect for me. And I said, well, who is she? And he said, it's not a she, it's a college in Indiana. It's the top engineering school in the country, and they've got some of the best Division III athletic facilities around and in this great state and in the country, and came down here and was lucky enough to get an interview and talk my way into the job. And I've been here since 2001, and Rose Holman is a great place. Now, I don't work in the athletic side of things anymore. Now I'm in the development side, so I get to go out and raise money for all these great young students here at Rose Holman.
Well, that's definitely a full-time job, especially nowadays with the situation with schools struggling to get
sure.
that development fund up. So what made you decide to run for office?
I was sick of yelling at TV. I was sick of yelling at the TV. I've always paid attention to politics and our government, especially local government, and have always been very interested in what's going on. And really, the closer the government gets to you, the more and more important I think it is, because it can help you and hurt you a lot quicker. When we look at the federal government, I think everybody automatically thinks about the president and Congress and a lot of the things that they do. It trickles, and it takes years and years and years for us to feel that. But on the local level, on the state level, we can do things. We can help our neighbors on a very, very instantaneous basis, really. So I just looked at the representation that I was receiving, and I guess my I guess we all have egos. My ego was big enough to think that, you know what, I can go in there and do a better job and help my community out better than the folks who are in there right now.
Oh, I echo your sentiments. I talk about it all the time that really, you know, the stuff that happens on Capitol Hill has such a little impact as what happens at your state capitol.
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
People would ask you, you have a better shot of, you know, probably being elected president of France and getting a sports wagering bill passed in any state in this country, especially after the trouble poor New Jersey has had in their fight. What made
right.
you submit House Bills 1073 and 1074?
Sure. Well, just, you know, looking at the way our society is changing, and there are plenty of examples out there of different cultural issues that we've seen change over the last decade or so, and paying attention to what New Jersey is doing, and if you pay any attention to the huge business that is gaming, there's going to be changes, and times change and people change. And I just think that, you know, when Indiana has made we've gone all in, so to speak, on gaming here a decade plus ago, 15, 20 years. And when we started with our river boats, and we've expanded that to racinos and other off-track betting facilties. But our revenues are trending downwards. Over the last 5 years, they've decreased every year. So what do we do as a state to help that industry continue to be viable? And ultimately, it helps fund a large, you know, portion of our budget. Well, you know, if we're going to use the same business model as we did 20 years ago, it's going to fail. So we have to adapt and we have to enhance what we're doing. And I looked at these two bills as a step in that direction.
Yeah, I talk about it all the time on the Mo Radio Show, where the law from 1992, if you think about the demographics of a lot of your constituents, they're younger people that weren't even born.
You're right.
And so they're of legal gambling age now. My son fits right into that world. He was a 93 baby, so he's 21. The world is so different. It is so dramatically different. Technology is different. People are different. The world as a global environment is different. It's kind of sad to me that we're hanging around the law that is so far past its prime, but it impacts, because it's a federal law, it impacts all of the states. If you, Alan, had a crystal ball, could you tell our listeners when you think that realistically there's a day that would be coming, we would be able to bet on the Colts to win the next year's Super Bowl or the Pacers to win this year's NBA championship, and we wouldn't have to leave the state to do it?
I think realistically that 1992 law, PASPA, within the next 10 to 15 years, we'll have a serious challenge. And whether that is up, all the way up to the Supreme Court, or whether it is a talk of repeal within Congress. And the reason being is as we see some of these DFS, the daily fantasy sports leagues like FanDuel and DraftKings and other entities are going to pop up, and other ways to have some form of gaming, I think that our legislators and judges across the country are going to start to say, you know what, times have changed. And you know, I use this analogy, and I don't know if it's if it's the best analogy, but I think it fits. Is, you know, we actually have said that this industry is legal. This is an activity that adults in America can do, and that is betting on sports. But you can only do it in one state, right? Well, that would be akin to saying, okay, parasailing is really fun and it is legal to do, but we want Florida to be the only state that can make money doing this. So while I understand Hawaii and California, you've got and all the other coastal states, you've got a great place to do and everything, but it can only happen in Florida. Well, nobody would go for that, right? It's completely off base and it's unconstitutional, and I see that changing within the next 10 or 15 years.
I would agree wholeheartedly. The one thing that really fuels the fire is the topic this next 2 weeks of the amount of money that's going to be wagered on the Super Bowl, and a large, massive proportion, estimated 90% of it, illegally. So has your office made any estimates on the amount of money that would be wagered in your state legally on sports wagering if it was available?
Yeah, I had our LSA, which is our Legislative Services Agency, do a report for me, and they came up with random numbers, and somewhere, and this is a huge range, but somewhere between $12 to $70 million of tax revenue back to the state. That would translate, obviously, into hundreds of millions of dollars, legally waged throughout the state on an annual basis. So it certainly would. It would certainly drive tourism. It would drive more jobs. Ultimately, it's an economic builder, and it's a job creator. And you know, one of our bigger industries here in the state of Indiana is tourism. We get a lot of bang for our buck as well on our tourism industry, and I think it would be another thing that would certainly be a welcomed addition, with the exception of a few entities that would fight it.
And that's a great segue. How do you categorize the pushback people? Are they people that have a financial investment? Are they the people that are living in the past? Is it a moral, ethical situation? Who really is giving, in your situation, in your state, represented, who's giving the biggest fight?
Well, the NCAA, without a doubt. You know, they obviously have made a very concerted effort to state that they are against sports wagering. There are no national championships or regional championships held within the state of Nevada because of the sports wagering there. So, you know, them along with the four major sports leagues were the driving force behind that 1992 law that we've referenced. Now we have seen Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, come out. I would not be shocked at all if in this next 10 or 15 years, if you start to see new commissioners of these major sports starting to look at what the NBA has said and what they're doing, and the relationships that now these major sports leagues are starting to put together with the daily fantasy sports leagues. And there's big money there because of the marketing dollars that are involved in it. You know, it's something that the NCAA, I think they're going to have to evolve on this issue because, you know, again, what my law or what my bill says is that Indiana would be able to institute sports wagering only if the federal government says it is now legal, and then our gaming commission could go ahead and pull the trigger, and then we could take the steps to make that happen. So the NCAA, if they are, you know, if they're going to, I guess, hold that card that we're not going to host any Final Fours or championships here in this state, well, once it's legal throughout the country, I don't think they're gonna play that card on people, and if they do, they're gonna start running from state to state to state, and they're not gonna have anywhere to hold their national championships because every state that has gaming will probably ultimately end up having sports wagering.
No, that would be a year-round revenue stream versus a once every 7 or 8 year revenue hit.
That's right.
So that takes their fight away from them. In terms of Las Vegas and the state that does have legalized sports wagering, do they have any people active in Indiana since you've put these in, lobbyists or anything that shows their presence?
I've had some conversations with some different companies and some different people, and you know, it's certainly it got their attention. And what I was happy to see is that it was not at least from the entities that I've spoken with, not a monopoly that they're looking at, where that, oh, if we have it in any other state, then that's less money for us out here. They look at, obviously, they're businessmen, and they look at it as an opportunity to make more money if it expands. So for the different organizations that I've spoken with, they're all for it, and they would love to see an expansion or an enhancement is what I would say, an enhancement of the gaming industry throughout the country.
Well, I know that recently Caesars announced that they were filing for bankruptcy protection, and I'm thinking if I was Caesars and I had an affiliate in Indiana during March Madness taking legal sports on basketball, I think we could help the bottom line a little bit. What do you think?
I would say so. Yeah, the first 4 days of that March Madness, of that tournament, is actually the biggest betting time of the year. The next is the Super Bowl. So you want to talk about a lot of money being, you know, exchanging, especially illegally. You know, show me an office in America that doesn't have an office pool for the Final Four and brackets posted up on the wall and somebody's taking care of everybody's money and then passing it out at the end, right?
No, you're absolutely right. You got a better shot of getting into Walmart on Black Friday than you do a sports book on that Thursday of the opening of March Madness.
That's right. That's right.
The other aspect of it that I think that is ignorant is the only word I can use, is these people that really think that because it's illegal, they're not doing it. And you can go down to any corner drugstore that has a Western Union or a MoneyGram and send your money to Costa Rica. And it's billions of dollars during football season and basketball season that are going there. It just, it hurts me to see that the common sense isn't prevailing. If you had your top two areas of need that this money came in and everything was good and you had that revenue number that you talked about, how could you take it and put it right back into your community?
Education and infrastructure. Easy. You know, education is obviously number one in every state. Indiana, we spend 55% of our biennial budget on education. We put our money where our mouth is when it comes to that, but obviously there are always needs. So education would certainly be top on that list. And then infrastructure, and if you don't have the roads and bridges to help move along commerce and make the goods and services that we provide here in Indiana, then you can't do business. So that's an easy ask right there.
No, it sure makes sense to me. You're reading more and more about bridges falling down. You would think that a little bit of common sense would go a long way. Alan, thanks so much for taking the time. We know you're very busy. We appreciate your sacrifice that you make for the state of Indiana, and again, wish you nothing but the best with all your efforts.
Well, thank you, Chad. I appreciate you having me.